What's new at Cold Wax Academy? There's still time to enter the first ever Open Call International Online Exhibit of work created using cold wax medium. Rebecca and Jerry invite you to submit 2D or 3D work in any stylistic approach from pure abstraction to realism that involves the use of cold wax. Selected artwork will be showcased for 2 months on the Cold Wax Academy website, and Cold Wax Academy and its marketing team will promote the exhibition to an international audience of over 15,000 subscribers through email, Instagram, and Facebook. The juror is Dan Addington of Addington Gallery in Chicago, and prizes totaling more than $750 will be awarded. The deadline to enter is May 20th, and you don't have to be a Cold Wax Academy member to submit. For more information, please visit coldwaxacademy.com and click on the Call for Art button. That's coldwaxacademy.com. That's all for now. On with the show. Hello and welcome to The Messy Studio with Rebecca Kroll, the podcast at the intersection of art, travel, entrepreneurship, philosophy, and life in general. I am Ross Tickner, Rebecca's audio producer, podcast guru, and her son. On today's episode, we are talking about being authentic, influence versus copying. All artists are influenced by others, but when an artist has an authentic voice, their influences are well integrated from their own unique vision. But unfortunately, sometimes the influence from another artist is so strong that the boundaries between the two are blurred. Today we'll talk about being influenced by other artists, when it is too much, and what it means when another artist is being copied. We'll also mention ways that influence can be constructive and positive and part of an authentic creative voice. With me, as always, is Rebecca Kroll.
Hello, everyone. So, kind of bottom line about making art is it is about being influenced, and it is about what you do with those influences. But I think that your number one influence is, or at least it should be, your own life, your experiences, your memories, your thoughts, your feelings. I mean, all those things that are unique to you, and that's what should at least feed most of your work. It's coming from you, and that's how you feel connected to your work. And you know, you're expressing something that you need to express because of who you are. So that, I think that influence is just a given in creativity. But today, as you said, we do want to focus on influences from other artists. In some way, overtly or not, or consciously or not, these are also an aspect of what you create as an artist. I mean, we are all open to influences from other people. And that itself isn't a bad thing. I mean, it's kind of a given as part of creativity, because creativity doesn't exist in a vacuum. As artists, you know, we're always naturally inspired by other artists that we know of in the present time or people from the past, because, you know, we're just interested in what they do, and we observe and we notice and kind of absorb things that other people do. And it's such a kind of a normal or given or accepted thing that a lot of times in an interview or an artist statement, an artist will talk about these influences, or they'll be asked about those. So that's, you know, that's an understood thing, that these influences feed your work. But there is a point when influences is too much. And your work so closely resembles somebody else that it's clear that you're copying, that you're overly influenced. And that's the issue that we want to talk about today. And where that really is noticeable, it can be seen as related to where you are as an artist, like your stage of development. So whether you're starting out or whether you're further along, and the further along you are, the more mature you are as an artist, the more expected it is that you're going to have your own voice, that your work isn't going to closely resemble somebody else's. But when you are learning something new, and maybe you're in a workshop or you're taking an art class, then, you know, it is pretty natural to pick up on what the instructor is doing, because I think in your own mind, it's sort of like, oh, well, that's how you do it. You know, this person that's teaching me knows. And so that's something that I can emulate. And, you know, that is really common. And I think as an instructor, it's somewhat expected. But there's a point for the artist to recognize that and say, okay, I'm ready to move on. I don't really want my work to look just like the instructor's. And that's a really kind of an important turning point. And a good instructor will encourage you to do that, to branch out, find your own voice. That what they're presenting to you is, it's the way they do it. It's an option as a way to start, but it is a way to start. It's a jumping off point. And I know that a lot of instructors don't really take that step, and they do teach as if this is the way to do it. And that blocks a lot of people, I think, that are taking classes and workshops. So, you know, if you've had an experience like that, to recognize, you know, I don't want my work to look just like the instructor's. I want to do my own thing. So that, you know, that's kind of that learning phase, where if you're in that phase, you kind of need to step back and, you know, take a good hard look at what's going on when you're ready to move on, when you've got the skills and whatever technique the person is teaching, you know, you're ready to take off.
Yeah, this is, it's very similar to a concept that is talked about in the context of comedy very often, where when people are learning, they tend to emulate people who are more well-known, but it's very frowned upon to steal jokes. And a common defense for this is parallel thinking. You know, I was thinking along the same lines, and I came up with the same kind of funny concept. In the art world, it might be I was thinking along similar lines, and I came up with a similar technique. I think that there are cases where parallel thinking or parallel development in the case of the art world is a legitimate response. But you still want to be, if you notice that that's happening with your own work, you want to be distinct from other people for your own benefit.
Right. I think that's a really good point. And it is, you know, the old cliche, there's nothing new under the sun. You know, a group of artists may develop along the same lines, even without knowing each other, come to a similar way of working. But I think when there's a really direct influence, it's pretty obvious, and over influence. It's an interesting point that you make, because that does happen. You know, given a certain technique, given a certain material, there will be results that are similar. And then it's kind of like you say, to be aware of that and then say, okay, I acknowledge this is happening. What can I do to make this, you know, my own, totally my own? And so I think the more you develop as a mature artist, if your work looks a lot like somebody else's, it's noticeable, and it's a detriment. You know, it is. People can see that they're connecting the dots, and they can see that your work is so close to someone else. If that someone else is somebody that's more recognizable in the art world, it's going to be more obvious. But sometimes what your work is resembling somebody who isn't well known, who's a little more obscure. And then the people that are looking at your work may not be aware of this other artist. So then it's like, okay, who originated this? You know, is it you or is it the other person? And that gets pretty sticky, because the person that you're being influenced by may not even know that you're doing that until there's some situation, is on social media, in an exhibit or something, and they see your work and they say, oh, wow, that looks so much like mine. But I've been doing this for 10 years, and this is a relatively new person. again, there's a lot of gray areas here. Did you both just come to the same conclusion? But there's degrees of this. And I have seen examples where it was so very clear that that the person was basically copying, which isn't a very nice word, stealing, plagiarizing, but, you know, that's kind of, you know, calling it like it is, I guess. One of the problems with it is a lot of people that look at art, they don't have a really finely tuned eye. You know, they may not really distinguish at all between your work and someone else's if it's too close. And, you know, then it's really blurry. And that's, you know, you as the artist may say, oh, my work's quite different, you know. But if that first impression, that visual impact is that similar, then I feel like it's problematic. And sometimes, of course, artists rationalize copying as flattery, as, oh, the other artist should be pleased that I like their work so much that I'm doing something so similar. But I don't know of anyone, any artist who really wants their ideas taken by another person. It feels like a violation. It doesn't feel like flattery. And that's, you know, if you say it's complimentary, I think that's just fooling yourself if you're the one that's doing that. And it's really, it's kind of not fair on two levels. It's not fair to an artist who is being overly influenced by someone because they're not developing their own path. You know, they're being a bit blocked because they found this thing that they're sort of lifting from someone else. It's kind of working. But where would they be without that? Where would they be if they did not take that route? They would be further along in their own development. And then obviously, in terms of not being fair, it's not fair to that other artist. And sometimes the person who is being copied loses authenticity in the eyes of people who don't really know that they're the originator of the idea. And I heard from an artist recently that, you know, her style was being copied by someone, and that person was being exhibited and shown, and then she starts to look like the copier, you know, but she was pretty sure it was a direct lifting from her work. And that gets really odd, you know, like you go to a gallery to see if they'll take your work, and they say, oh, but your work is so much like so-and-so's, we don't need another artist like that. And you're thinking, yeah, well, you know, they took it from me. And that's quite an odd situation to be in. So,
well, how do you think that you should respond to that situation? Whether I think that there are, you know, we discussed kind of like a parallel development scenario. There are situations where you may have done nothing wrong, or you may have, you know, you may be overly influenced by somebody else's work. But in either situation, and in fact, you know, this other person may be the one who is overly influenced or copying you. But in any of those situations, what is the best way to respond? Because most of the time, I think people, especially in this context, they tend to be very polite and are not.
Yes.
Usually it's not going to turn into like some social media battle like, oh, you copied me. I mean, I suppose that happens too, but
it does. It's a very sticky area because determining that someone has actually copied from you is hard.
Right.
Sometimes it's pretty obvious. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes artists are overly sensitive in thinking somebody's copying them, but the other person may have arrived there on their own.
In most cases, this is going to be brought up in the context of like, your work is very similar to so-and-so's, just like you said. And regardless mm-hmm. of what the implication of that is, whether they copied you or you copied them or it was a parallel development thing, whatever it was, you know, it's whatever the truth is about that, you still have to respond mm-hmm. to it in some way.
Uh-huh. I think if it were me, I would say, you know, if you look at the body of my work over the years, you will see that what I do is original. And that, you know, that might be the answer if that's the case. It goes beyond that superficial visual impression that your work is like someone else's. And it's really the long term. It's whether the artist who is feeling like they have to defend themselves, if they show their own development in their own path as being unique, I think that's basically the answer. Now it's, you know, that requires the person who's questioning this to put in some effort to look at this. And usually that's not going to happen in a lot of contexts, but I guess that's what I would say is the best response. And if someone wants to follow up on it, they can.
Well, and that response also has to be true.
Well, it does. Yes. I'm assuming that the person who's trying to defend themselves is doing original work. But it's that long-term thing, you know, it's that, development over the years. It's not lifting something from someone that is convenient. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that, why that happens, that it can be unconscious. I mean, it can be a case of not, you know, like wanting to steal something. It can be something kind of under the surface, a little bit subconscious that you're doing. And then, you know, it's a reckoning with yourself about where your ideas are coming from.
Well, let's take a quick minute to talk about what deals and promotions are available at Blick. Right now, Conti crayons are between 20 and 57% off of list price. Invented in France in 1795 by Nicolas Jacques Conti, especially for drawing and sketching, Conti crayons are made from a blend of natural pigments, kaolin clay, and graphite. The Conti crayon has been used by many of the world's greatest artists, including Picasso. The rich, vivid colors of Conti crayons mix together nicely, and a range of effects can be consistently produced. They are well suited for use on newsprint, Bristol, toned paper, or heavily grained surfaces. Their rich opacity makes them ideal for work on darker papers, and their quality ensures the longevity of drawings. Conti crayons are waxier and much firmer than soft pastels, so they produce little dust and are easy to control. So once again, Conti crayons are 20 to 57% off list price. To take advantage of this promotion, please remember to use our Blick affiliate link, which is, of course, messystudiopodcast.com/Blick, B-L-I-C-K. That will bring you straight through to the regular Blick website. And when you use our affiliate link, Blick will donate a very generous 10% to the Messy Studio Podcast, which really helps us to pay bills around here. This is our most powerful tool for being able to get our bills paid. So please remember, once again, that's messystudiopodcast.com/Blick to take advantage of Conti crayons and sets being 20 to 57% off list price. All right, that's all for now. Let's get back into the show.
Okay, so I guess I'd like to get into kind of the whys. Why do people do this? Why are people overly influenced by another artist? And there's different reasons, but I would say any of these that I'm going to mention get in the way of your own growth and development and just your own satisfaction or connection to what you're doing as being you, as being authentic. So one of the reasons that this happens is it's not nefarious at all. It's, I would say, a lack of confidence that you have anything original to bring to your work. And, you know, again, a little more, probably more common when people are starting out, but it's easy to feel like everything's already been done. You know, what do I have to say that's anything new? And it takes, you know, a long time to figure out your authentic voice, your personal voice. And it can be discouraging, and as you're going through all those stages, and it does take a lot of confidence and motivation to keep at it and keep going, to find that personal voice that's really connected to you. And so influences that do come through when you find that voice are things that you've integrated into your own vision. But this is a process and it can take a while. But it does start with the basic belief that you do have something to say. And again, getting back to that basic source of your work, if it's authentic to you, is your own life, your own experiences. What are you interested in? And that goes beyond just the visual. It goes beyond the way something looks. It's the source of what you're going to be doing. So that's, it's a challenging process, okay? And it's understandable that being heavily influenced by another person seems like a path. It's already sort of there for you. You can follow it. I think another kind of rationalization for being heavily influenced by someone is that it doesn't really matter that there's enough separation between you and the other artist. Maybe the other person is more well-known than you are, and people aren't really seeing your work that much. So you think, well, I'm way in the shadows. You know, that other person who I'm emulating is much more well-known, so it doesn't really matter what I do. I'm not in the same market, if you want to put it that way. I'm not at the same level they are. And that, you know, as the artist, you say, well, my work really is pretty different. Yeah, like you can sort of see it. But on the surface, at least, it heavily resembles someone else's. Well, I think in that case, you're not really hurting that more well-known person by what you do, but I think you're hurting yourself because, again, you're sort of taking that easy path. And these kind of things can be unconscious. You know, it can be something that you're not really focusing on in your own mind, and that, you know, it can go on a long time until somebody maybe says to you, hey, your work looks a lot like so-and-so's. And then it's a bit of reckoning there in your own mind to decide if that's true. There are other reasons that people copy that. They're shortcuts. They're, you know, not as understandable, really, because it's trying to make your life easier, I guess, as an artist. One is that you're avoiding putting in the time to develop that original way of working. Again, it's hard. It takes a lot of effort. Takes a lot of work to get there. One of the most disturbing reasons that people do copy is they see it as a kind of a quick path in terms of marketing or whatever measures of success are important to that artist. You know, you've seen that someone else is successful with this way of, I'll say painting, but whatever it is that you do. And so you say, oh, okay, well that, you know, that sells, that's acceptable, I'll do that. And that's just, I'm sorry, I don't really get that. I think that's kind of, it's not good for anybody when you do that. And it saves you trying to find that consistency that market venues look for, right? They, when you approach a gallery, they want to see 10 paintings that are similar. If you're really emulating someone else, that consistency comes a lot easier because you have a model to work from. You're not finding your own way. You're not searching. And basically, it's kind of thinking that what someone else does successfully is, you know, it's your model. It's okay to do that too. So I don't see that as a good thing, healthy thing for either artist in that situation. So I think this kind of overly strong influence from other artists is something that is up to you to decide that you, if you want to avoid it. Your goal is to develop your authentic work. And because, as I kind of mentioned, this influence, if it's you're letting in too much of it, it can be insidious. You may not really be conscious of it. And so I think you need to be able to recognize it and question it and kind of step back from it. And one of the ways that this can happen is you're getting this kind of feedback along these lines about how your work looks so much like someone else's. And if someone confronts you with that, you know, take it seriously, really honestly evaluate it. It's typical to become defensive, to rationalize it, etc. But you're not doing yourself any favors. You have to see if there's truth in that. And you have to really look and be objective about it, I guess. So I guess I'd like to end up with talking about cycling back to the fact that influences can be really beneficial. You know, they're just something that all artists experience. And so how do you find that road of taking them in but not being dominated by them? And one of the main things that I think is important is don't rely too heavily on any one artist that you're being influenced by. Because when it's just one person or maybe two people, that impact is just too intense. I mean, it's sort of like if you're making, a stew and you're putting in, you know, so much garlic that you can't taste anything else, you know, it's that very strong element in the work that comes from one person. Okay. And I really, the way to avoid that is to be open to different influences and be aware of other art, like, you know, visit museums, read art books, and just, you know, be educated about different periods of art history. And when you're pulling from a lot of different sources, it's a lot more likely that you're going to be integrating these in your own way. You're going to be, you know, kind of striking out into new territory as all these different sources interact and interact also with that main influence that I mentioned, which is your own life, your interests, your moods, emotions, memories, all those things. So then it becomes a very interesting mix of things. Rather than being dominated by one influence. Another thing that is important to keep in mind is not taking someone else's work sort of as a whole, but taking bits and pieces. And the phrase that I like to use to describe that is working with visual ideas. And this means like, aspects of someone else's work are considered, but in an isolated way. It's kind of like if you hear an interesting word that someone uses or maybe a phrase and you think, oh, I like that, you know, and then that sort of creeps into your own vocabulary. That's one thing. But if you're writing something and you're taking entire paragraphs, sentences from another writer, well, we know that's considered plagiarism, right? So it's kind of like if you just take a word, that's one thing. If you take an entire paragraph, that's another thing. And so I guess as an example, a lot of abstract artists admire Richard Diebenkorn's work. And so the way to work with something like that as visual ideas is looking at his work and saying, oh, you know, I like the way that he uses these blocks of color, or I like the way that he has, you know, a flat color next to a more visual textured area. That's a visual idea. And when you bring that to your own work, it's going to be you, not Diebenkorn. It's a way of just picking something that you're interested in. And all artists do that, I think. I certainly do it in a museum. I'm looking around and, oh, I like that color combination, you know, and I kind of take note of it. And then it may appear at some point in my work, but not in a way that would be copying. I don't know. Hopefully that makes sense. But it's the small bits. And, you know, it's said that artists are like sponges. We're always soaking things up. But then you wring out the sponge, it's all mixed together. You know, it's your own combination. Another thing I want to mention is, when you look at someone else's work that you admire and you like it, when you think about what is it about that work that you like, and sometimes the work that you're admiring has no visual connection to what you do. For example, it might be, in my case, a portrait. You know, I don't really do portraits. I'm not interested in doing portraits. But what I like about the portrait might be that it feels very personal, very expressive. If it's a self-portrait, it's autobiographical. And those are qualities that I like to bring to my work. It's more of an idea than something visual. And so what you're getting from another person's work might not be the appearance of it. And the appearance is usually what we identify as copying, is what something looks like, not necessarily the ideas behind it. And when you're working with ideas, wow, the expression of those ideas is completely open-ended. So that's something to think about when you're looking at something and say, oh, I really like that. What are the ideas behind it? What is the artist's motivation? Is there something that I connect with? And then the last thing would be to avoid comparing your work to somebody who is a mature, developed artist, if you're not at that point. So maybe you're starting out and you look at someone who's further down the road and you say, I'm never going to get there. Wow, they are so much better than me, whatever. When you're stuck in that point of feeling inadequate, you're not going to get there, you don't have anything to say, you know, that's frustrating and depressing. And it can make this kind of copying more tempting because it is, you know, it seems like an easy way to get there. And it can seem like an answer. But when you do that, you're really cutting your own development off. And so what I'm talking about here is an inner sense, and I mentioned this before, that kind of confidence that, yes, you can develop your own voice, but a way to lose confidence is, you know, to look at someone who's out there, who's exhibiting, who's selling their work, whatever goals you want for your work, and they're already there. Try not to, you know, compare yourself, because they went through all this stuff to get there. And it's just the path. It's what you got to do.
Well, do you have any final thoughts to wrap up this episode?
I think to get back to that cooking analogy that I mentioned, I kind of like to compare influences to flavors in cooking. Cooking something that's complex, you know, like a stew or something that has a lot of different ingredients. And all these ingredients are combining in interesting ways. And the taste of that stew, the flavor of it is unique. It has its own character. It's not any one thing. It's how they're all working together. And sometimes, you know, if you're cooking a stew, something will, you know, bubble to the surface, and then you need to integrate it into the rest of the stew. So that's kind of an interesting analogy, I think, if it helps. And also just to remember that basic influence is you. It's what makes you unique as a person and will be unique as an artist.
All right. Well, that just about wraps up this episode of The Messy Studio. For more from The Messy Studio, please go to messystudiopodcast.com and sign up for the email list. You can also find The Messy Studio on Facebook, as well as Rebecca's public profile page. For more from Rebecca Kroll, check out rebeccakroll.com and Cold Wax Academy at coldwaxacademy.com. Be sure to sign up for the email list to stay up to date on events, book signings, and openings. For more from myself, Ross Tickner, check out rosstickner.com. The Messy Studio is a Tick Digital Media production. Thanks for listening. We'll be back again with more art and entertainment. Until then,
embrace your creative space,
messy or otherwise.
Thanks, everybody.